I often get insights from the spiritual life from the newspaper. Why I still read the news so much, it's depressing sometimes. This week, I think it was this week, we heard about the thing where they're checking our phone records and the internet traffic and the, I guess they have access to the GPS records and different sorts of things. And people, if we're like any, there was a poll taken, if we're like most Americans, about half of us feel this is necessary for safety, and the other feel it's an invasion of our privacy. And I mention this because as I'm reading this, like the rest of you, trying to figure out what to make of all this, the first thing I thought of was, yeah, well, this sounds vaguely familiar to me. Not only where I used to work, American Airlines, when I was on the phone the first few years, they were listening to every phone call. But the Lord has told us very clearly that this is exactly what's going on in the spiritual life. We worry about the government, maybe, but we don't think at all about Christ, who he said, you know, you're in the middle of a time test, I've said many times, and every word, every deed, every action is taped. We played back for us, along with everyone else who was associated, will be invited to the movie. Ooh. How do I get the erase button? I want to edit the film before it's shown. And the Lord says, I don't want to show these parts. I want you to deal with it now. Reminds me of, I shouldn't bring this up. President Nixon had a woman named Rosemary Woods. Any of you remember her? She very famously hit the erase button and 18 minutes of a tape disappeared. She said her foot slipped. I don't know if that's true or not, but what I need is a Rosemary Woods to step on the tape, you know. And Jesus says, it's very simple. Let me forgive you. When we try to forgive, we forgive, but boy, that tape, we still remember, don't we? And Christ, you know, we can't forget like God. God forgets. He doesn't bring it up. But that's why we have a sacrament of reconciliation, particularly for the grave sins. This story is very familiar. It is actually the story of all of us. All of us are this woman. Jesus comes in order to understand the impact of the story, we need to know a few things about that world. Jesus, when a person comes to dinner at somebody's house, what are the normal things that we do to show hospitality? Do we serve dinner right away? No. We take their coat. What else do? Offer something to drink. An appetizer. Talk for a while. We don't say, oh, let's hurry up and eat. And then as a guest, we get right up and say, oh, I got to go. Usually, that's not too cool. So in Jesus' culture, the first thing you do is get the kiss of peace, which we still use in the liturgy. It's a formal thing of like cheek to cheek, and they do this sort of thing. That was means you are welcome in my home. They would have a bowl of water to wash feet. Usually somebody of a lesser dignity would do this. And they put some ointment on the forehead because they didn't bathe as often there. It was a courtesy to other guests. But now I won't go into that. Notice Jesus receives none of these courtesies. He's invited. Why is he invited? Was he treated rudely? We don't know. We do know that Jesus noticed. No doubt the Pharisee was in a higher social caste. He's very wealthy. He has a large home. And Jesus is a common laborer. You can tell by his hands. He has aspirations of being a rabbi, but does not have the education. This is from the Pharisee's point of view. Maybe he's telling him, I'm deigning to have you in my home, but you are of a lesser social status. That's kind of funny, isn't it? And Jesus goes along with this, no doubt noticing that none of these things are done for him. Maybe the Pharisee's already formed a negative judgment. If he hadn't before, he soon will. Because when a Pharisee has a dinner like this, they would often leave the door open for people of the area to come in and listen to the the religious discussion that's going to be taking place. Jesus is invited because the Pharisee is going to be scoping Jesus out to check his theology, what he's teaching. This is his job. He's the religious leader of the community. This is a very good thing the Pharisee did. But he's not open to what Jesus is saying. And in, along with the others that come in to listen, we don't know if they ate, but along with them comes someone the Pharisee doesn't want in the house, a unclean, sinful woman, a woman with a reputation in town. And the first thing she does, the first thing they notice is she's let her hair down. In that culture, it means I'm open for business, if you get my drift. Polite women did not let their hair down in that culture unless you were a person of the evening. So this is probably what she had done. What she's doing, she's making a public confession. I know what I've done. I know who I am. She goes right to Jesus. She makes a beeline for Jesus, who's probably in the middle of a conversation with the Pharisee and maybe even making a good impression up to that point. And comes right over and begins to bathe him with her tears and wipe his feet with her hair that she has let down. By allowing her to touch him, just like last week with the dead body of the widow of Nain, Jesus is rendering himself ritually impure again. A person of ill repute should not be allowed to touch you lest you contract this same spiritual virus. You see, Jesus is taking her sins on himself. Notice how he allows us to touch him when nobody else will. He's the first to welcome us back. And it's a beautiful image. And she bathes her feet, his feet with her tears. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking how relevant that is. When a person goes to confession, we keep two boxes of Kleenex back there, and it gets used a lot. There are some sins that we commit that we cannot ever undo. Somebody's died, and you weren't reconciled. David committed adultery in the first reading. This was his repentance, and the Psalm 51 was... It is said, written by David after this. He repented because he got caught. The Bible is very honest about the religious leaders. We can't undo this. We can get over it. Our marriage can recover, but it's hard. But we can't undo what we did. Abortion is like this. People think if they come into confession, the church is going to throw a book at them. We're going to mediate God's healing and help them with some ideas about how to cope with what's happened. And it's just great. And people come out, perhaps after a long absence from the sacrament, weeping because, just like this woman, so much has been relieved from their back. It's incredible. So any priest would recognize this story as being extremely authentic in terms of what happens when you're truly grateful to be forgiven. When was the last time you were truly grateful that God forgave? You know you can't get into heaven without being forgiven? And that all of us are this woman, even one sin is infinitely offensive to God. How many times have we been forgiven? And the Lord never is repulsed by us, no matter how often, as long as we are willing to come to him. The Pharisee, for his part, he is a judge, and he needs to be, but he's sitting there judging the woman as unclean. He won't touch her. He won't invite her into his house. He has no need of Jesus' forgiveness. He's doing it all himself. By following the law, thank you very much, Jesus. I don't need your forgiveness. I'm fine the way I am. Does this sound familiar to us a little bit? It's the human condition. And this woman, who nobody would want at the dinner table, perhaps we wouldn't either, yet she's the one who's going to be... The reason these women are mentioned at the end of the story is probably because she joined them. And you see, along with the 12 and the others, they weren't all men. There was a whole group of women, some of whom were quite wealthy. The one was in the employment of, her husband was in the employment of Herod, and was very wealthy, and they were bankrolling Jesus as he went around the country. This woman probably was at the resurrection. Said some women were there. Some women were at the cross. Perhaps this woman was. Where was the Pharisee? Perhaps he was yelling, "Crucify him." We've had both roles. Which role do you take? It depends on where we're at. But this parable, this gospel, it's not a parable, it's something that really happened to Jesus. It ends with, it's in all four gospels, but each gospel has a different perspective. Mark is my favorite because the disciples complain about this ointment, you know, this nard. John says she brought a pound of it in. Others imply that it was a flask around the neck, but whatever it was alabaster, which is priceless, and the oil inside was extremely expensive, probably about a year's salary. And here are Jesus and the disciples living hand to mouth with some women supporting them, and Judas and the others say, "You know, Lord, this is a total waste of money. We could have used this to pay up, to not have to worry about money and food as we go around." And Jesus says, "Leave her alone. She's prepared me for my burial." And then he uses this line, "She has done what she could." I picked up a little bit of this when that guy from the Holy Land was here selling olive wood. He had this spikenard, same stuff that this lady had around her neck. He gave it to me as a gift. And on the back, like 1/4 ounce, $12. Expensive stuff. I keep it in my chapel because there are times when I feel, and I know you feel, that we can't do anything about something. One feels useless. But God says, do what you can. Do what you can. All I want is that you tried. This is wonderful advice. This woman, she didn't save Jesus from death. It looked like she wasted her money. She still had a reputation when she went out of there. But she did what she could, and the Lord was extremely impressed with that. So there's so much to take away from this gospel, but what we learn in the end is that there's nothing that repulses Christ except self-righteousness. This is the grave danger of all Christians, that we might look down on someone who doesn't have the same advantage as we had, or by the grace of God, have not fallen into this particular thing that someone else has done. Yes, we can call a sin, but never to judge the sinner, because Christ may be waiting to forgive them. They may become his best friend. Do I know my sins? How do I welcome Jesus at the door? Am I rude to him without realizing it? Did I greet him when he came to my door? Christ offers us this story, all four Gospels, to tell us that we're always welcome in his home. He will never reject us, even if everyone else does. He's always ready to forgive, and he invites us to learn to do the same.